We value the trust you put in us to bring you the best tri-state news coverage, and now you can start each weekday informed about our community. Subscribe to our Daily View email and receive stories from the award-winning WVXU news team in time for your morning coffee. Visit WVXU.org to subscribe.
Today on the show, from the IT Crowd in Crapopolis, Richard Ayoade. From Key & Peele and Community, Alex Rubens, plus an interview with Brian Shortall. It's The Novelizers.
Don't want your popcorn, don't want your milk duds, don't want my shoes stuck in pools of sticky cola. Don't show me romance, don't show me fist fights, just show me words printed out under the book lights. Yeah, baby, novelize the movie.
Well, here we are, guys. We made it. It is the final episode of the Matrix season of The Novelizers.
We made it through the Matrix.
We survived the Matrix. How do you feel? Is your worldview blown? Are you a different person than you were when this season started?
I must be honest with you guys. I've had moments where I didn't know who I could trust, didn't know what was real, or things like that. And, you know, it was a rough 2 weeks, but I'm back now. You know, I'm more confident. You know, and I understand how to get out of it. So I've lost a lot of friends, but, you know, everything will be okay. Everything will be okay.
Yeah, I watched this movie 20 years ago as a kid, and my mind was blown then, and it's even more blown now, knowing that, you know, there were so many people working behind the scenes and all these odd jobs, and you know, it's a really different film for me now. I feel I feel like a changed person.
Yeah, and I woke up thinking that I was the one, and all of you are just illusions. So
there's a lot of people out there who think that. So I don't think you're alone thinking that you're alone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I mean, they're wrong and I'm right, because there can only be one chosen one. But yeah, I get where they're coming from, I think. So before we get to our final episode, we have one final chance to ask all of you, dear listeners, to pitch in a little bit for our Patreon. Who wants to do the pitch today? Me?
You know, for a dollar, which I've been told is you can actually get something off of the dollar menu at McDonald's for a dollar.
Yes,
that's a real thing.
Uh-huh.
Just learning that. Yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh.
You could support us and show us that you've loved this season so far. This is our last episode this season, but we will be announcing our new movie here soon. And so, yeah, chip in and keep this thing going, because we're excited to tell you about next season.
Yeah, and I always remember, you know, they always say a dollar a day you could save, you know, send a kid in Africa or something like that. But, or, you know, we just take a dollar a month, you know, and I think that's a good investment as well.
Yeah.
We're both growing.
Yeah, if you have $2, maybe do both. I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
it doesn't
probably
have to
a
be
better
an
sell.
Or.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to really go up against
all
that
right.
One. Well, let's get into it. Today's chapter was novelized by Alex Rubens, who has written for Key & Peele, Community, Rick and Morty, and even a film called Keanu, starring Keegan-Michael Key, Jordan Peele, and Tiffany Haddish. His chapter is narrated by stand-up comedian, writer, and actor Richard Ayoade, whose voice you've heard in Kung Fu Panda, Disenchantment, Black Mirror, Rugrats, and of course, The IT Crowd, where he plays the hardworking Maurice Moss. Richard Ayoade, for the final time this season, novelize us.
Chapter 21, Now Get Up. Novelized by Alex Rubens, narrated by Richard Ayoade. For a moment, he forgot where he was, who he was, and the moment, remember, is all there is. Past has passed, future hasn't happened yet, etc. Point being, for a moment, sort of means forever. He was dead. Forever. Then he heard a voice. Neo? Right, that's who he was. Neo! I'm not afraid anymore. Wait, was that who he was? He'd been thinking Thomas. Andy? Anderson. Or was it Richard? The Oracle told me I would fall in love. Okay, hold on. Now that was Trinity. Trinity he knew. And that man, the man I loved, would be the one. So you see, she said as he saw, you can't be dead. You can't, said Trinity, whom he didn't just know, but loved. He loved her folks because I love you. She said she loved him. Now we're talking. You hear me, she said. And by the way, it was only when she said it that he realized, yeah, he could actually. I love you. Trinity loved him, and him hearing her say it meant he was alive, and him being alive meant he was the one she was talking to, and that meant Trinity was his girlfriend. Now get up, his girlfriend told him. There was an idea, brimming with new energy and the power of love. Neo got up. Now get up, she said. Okay, so now here was actually a bit of a problem. Intellectually, he knew now. Did he know? Yes, he knew. He knew he was alive. And what's more, he knew he was the one. The problem was, here's the problem, was any of this real? What was real? Because he had the sinking feeling he did know what was real. Los Angeles, 2029. Skynet was on the... No, wait, no. Los Angeles, 1998. Genius fight choreographer Yuen Wu Ping's training process has left Keanu Reeves with injuries requiring hip surgery. London, 2024. Reading a Google Doc into a microphone for a podcast. No! Hallway, tenement, hovercraft, Trinity. Now get up. Here's the problem. What are we even doing? I mean, it's a comedy podcast and I'm reading it, but it's quote-unquote self-aware, the writing. I mean, even the fact that I'm saying all this is cutesy, meta-hackery, because obviously it's part of the script. I'm reading it. And let's face it, this kind of thing was all beyond done already as long ago as the 70s. The 70s? When was Lost in the Funhouse? I'm sorry. Nobody likes this kind of fourth wall foolery. Well, not nobody, but it's not exactly a time-tested crowd-pleaser. It doesn't exactly pack the arenas. I mean, does Charlie Kaufman have a pool? I don't know. Not that pools are what matter, but they don't not matter. At least not if you want a pull. But that's my point. This kind of writing, this self-conscious, self-aware sort of show-offy, and it's still happening, by the way. You're of course aware this is still it. It's an ongoing problem. The disease doesn't cure itself with a self-diagnosis. And calling out the calling out of it doesn't make it less infuriating. So what I'm driving at is, what's the goal? To tickle the fancy of the sort of person who needs their entertainment smart, and I put quotes around that, smart. It's very important to me that my entertainment be smart. In fact, even the word entertainment is a little, do you have any art? But this is comedy. Well, but all the more important. All the more important because, don't you know, comedy is an art form, just as surely as a novelist now recognized as an art form, even though when it came out, it was trash, and why don't they read epic poems anymore, etc., etc. So, what are we doing with this kind of thing is my question. Trying to prove we're smart? Is that what this is? And by the way, let's say it is what it is. Is that so terrible? Does it mean we deserve ridicule? It's not charismatic necessarily, probably not specifically especially attractive, maybe even the opposite, self-defeating, but is it so awful? So much so that we're inviting abuse. Did you see that Mr. Rogers documentary? You matter. We matter. Everyone matters, every little kid, but also who the little kids grow up to be. Needy, insecure, flawed grown-ups like you, like me. You don't have to prove your worth. We don't have to carve it into an unyielding reality that's set on destroying or at least controlling us. We're part of reality, as much a part as every other part. We are reality. We're real. We're alive. So he got up. The agents turned, stunned. No, he said. And of course they fired their guns. Hail of bullets, the whole thing. And he just stopped them. Stopped the bullets right in midair. They hung there. And he didn't have to do this, but it was a gesture of authentic curiosity. He plucked one of the bullets right out of the air, just took it between his fingers and held it up, and then all the other bullets dropped to the ground, and the agents were like, huh? How? He saw the code. Agent Smith ran at him, went at him, but he was nothing now, nothing. Neo easily deflected his punches, didn't even have to think about it really. In fact, he took a second to think about other things like, what if he was dead actually? What if this was a dream he was having in the last second of his life? Did that sort of thing happen? What if he was undergoing psychiatric treatment by concerned doctors because he couldn't remember what was real and what wasn't real? He kicked Agent Smith away like nothing, and then, why not? Dove into him and just blew him right the hell up. The other agents watching didn't even really have time to fully process, and remember, they were computer programs, and they still didn't even really have time to begin to process what they had just seen before he flexed and reality flexed around him. At which point, the agents just looked at each other and ran away from each other, by the way. It wasn't a calculated retreat or something. These cats fled. It used to be, if you see an agent, run. But now the tables had turned. Now it was Messiah time, except Neo, cried Trinity, because the squid things were busting into their submarine hovercraft or whatever those things were. And so Neo had to run to the landline matrix portal or however that worked. But before he knew if he had gotten to it in time, his friends on the ran out of time and had no choice, had to turn the key on the thing that deactivated the robots but would also make Neo go brain dead. But guess what? He was okay. And then it was all kissing and love. The other stuff too. It was pretty hot. I'll be honest about that. Let me just switch to the second person present for this last part here. Stylistic effect, it's fine. Don't worry about it. So you ring them up. Carry anomaly. System failure. And then they tried to trace it. And you're like, I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know you're afraid. Afraid of us. Afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without you. Without rules and controls. Without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you. You didn't have it planned out, you just kind of riffed it. Turned out pretty good. And you hang up the phone, just like you said, step out of the old phone booth like Superman, look around at all these people whose eyes you just said you're going to open, and you are going to open them. I mean, unless you're dead, unless you're psychotic, unless you're dreaming, unless you're fictional, unless you're confused, unless you and Agent Smith infected each other or something, or you're somehow still part of an even larger matrix that includes what you thought of as the matrix, involves what you do too as part of its programming, and you've done it a million times, and the rebel human rave city has destroyed a million times. Stop. Maybe they did shoot you and you did die or are dying right now. Doesn't seem so improbable, to be honest. Maybe you'll wake up dead like whoever said that said. But here's the thing. If so, if you do, meanwhile, you're flying around like friggin' Superman. Now get up.
Thank you, Richard. Of course, each week on the show, we interview someone who actually worked behind the scenes on The Matrix, who helped make the movie reality. And Christine, let's hear that interview.
All right. So I am here today with Brian Shortall, who was an extra on the film The Matrix. And, you know, there were a lot of extras in that film. And so I'm just thrilled to get to talk to one person who experienced being an extra on The Matrix and kind of what that was like for you, because it was such an iconic film. So, Brian, tell me a little bit about your experience on the movie.
Yeah, you bet. Well, I was actually just one day, and I was in the office scene where Keanu Reeves is escaping or something. I remember he was like crouching and he was running along the cubicles there. I was in the background running Xerox copies. So yeah, wow. I was there. Mm-hmm. And you see me twice. Two times.
See you twice in the movie. Okay, but you only did that one day on set. You were never back for another day.
No, because I think, I don't think they wanted to use people more than once. And I was also, I had, which sometimes you do, you find like an organic way to find a line. I found a line and I was like, oh, and I was told, oh, actually, that's not, we don't need lines here, your background and everything. But it was just so organic. I had to try it.
You know, I'm thrilled to hear what was the line that you tried?
I think it was, can you believe all these copies that we have to make of our work that we're here to do? Something like that.
So say that one more time. What was exactly?
I think it was, if I remember correctly, can you believe all these? And part of this was from an earlier script, I think, too. Someone told me that. Can you believe all the copies we have to make here at the work that we have? Or something. Maybe it exists in original scripts, but I pitched it. And I don't remember which came first, the chicken or the egg, but we tried it. And then that was when we kind of got like from the Wachowskis, he's like, no, that's not needed here. So
first of all, congratulations on them even allowing you to try a line. Most extras never get to try a line. And if you do try a line, you're usually cut right there. It's like, hey, get this guy out of here. He's trying to steal the scene. But they didn't do that to you, it sounds like.
Not at first. No, no. I mean, they didn't kick me out, but they weren't, they at first were like, hey, that's cool. Don't worry about it. And then I tried like a truncated line and they were like, how about if we move you to the back of the office? And I was like, that's fine. I get it. You know, sometimes it's trial and error really is what filmmaking is. So, but I was there and I got to see it all sort of the movie magic happen. Yeah.
It's funny because typically they would advise you, or I would suspect that they would advise you not to just talk about exactly the thing you're doing. Because how many times in life are you talking about the thing you're doing? Like when you're making a sandwich, you're not like, oh, I can't believe I have to put two pieces of bread together and then put something in the middle. And this is a sandwich. Like that's not something you'd typically be like, hey, did you grab the laundry? You know, something that's like not connected to the thing you're doing. So I can imagine why they were like, hey, that doesn't feel totally believable. This guy is making copies and just talking about the copies and work, like sort of a general sort of work line.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, that is a perspective. However, a lot of people don't think about this, and this is actually something I teach. We can get into that, is that you are saying that in your head. You are saying that. When you go and you're like, I'm going to cross the street now, you might not vocalize that, but that's certainly something that's in your brain because you're like, yeah. I'm going to drink this hot cup of coffee. Remember to drink it slowly. It's going to be real hot. Like you might not say that, but there are times, you know how you hear people mumble to themselves in real life or they talk under their breath?
Oh, yeah. That happens. I talk to myself all the time. Yeah. Okay. So
that's underrepresented on screen. You don't see that.
Interesting.
In movies.
This sounds like something you know a lot about. Did you mention something about teaching?
I do teach this. Yeah, I actually do. My experience on The Matrix was sort of seminal in my life because I realized when the Wachowskis were like, no, no, no. And they were directing me. I was like, wow, they're directing me. I'm the background. Nobody directs the background. Maybe I can direct the background. I know what I'm doing. So long story short, it prompted me to get a brick and mortar. I started a little school. It became a big thing. We're now in 4 states and it's, background university. And I really just kind of, you know, have fundamental principles that I work from. And that is that sometimes we all speak under our breath. And
this is called, the school is called Background University.
Yes. Yeah. You may have seen the logo. It's just like a big open prairie and then a tiny, tiny structure in the distance.
So, because it's like in the background.
I think so. And I think the background is underrepresented because it is in the background.
So quick question. To have the word university, don't you have to have like certain credentials?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have those?
I got it online. It took 10 minutes.
What did you have to do to get that?
Sign in. You got to have you got to come up with a password. Then you got to repeat it, which is ridiculous. I'm like, I just put it in. You got to make sure you're not a robot.
Okay.
There's a whole question.
But essentially, it's pretty easy, I guess, to get the word university.
Some of the top lights look like they're in the picture. They're not in the picture.
Oh, you mean, when you're trying to prove that you're not a robot. Got it. Yeah, those can be challenging. What are those called? CAPTCHAs?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you have a school. It's called Background University. It's in 4 states. This is all because of your one day on The Matrix where you tried a line, they said no, and you were like, you know what? I'm going to start directing background actors.
You know, Matrix Revelations, or was it Revolutions? Whatever the one it was.
Yeah.
Let's say it was Revelations. That's what I had.
Yeah. You had a revelation about this. You started this school. Now tell me, what is this school like? Tell me what you teach and what's your whole structure there?
Sure. We say, you know what's first? Whatever's last. Meaning the background's usually the last people thought of.
Yeah.
Right? You know, when there's a production, they're the last thing anyone's worried about, right? Or thinking about. Okay. We put that on its head.
Okay. So you're teaching background actors to steal the scene.
No. We're teaching back. Now that's I say that because that's a common misconception about other people that are criticizing this, which there have been some. We're not teaching them to steal a scene. We're teaching them that they are just as important in the scene. So what we do is we take classic movie scenes and plays and television shows and we flip them on their head. In other words, the background is the closest to the camera.
Physically closer. Foreground.
Absolutely.
Physically closer.
Right. The background's in the foreground. Thank you. And then the star way in the background. Sometimes you don't even see their whole face. You might still hear them. They might still drive the story, but we're getting a good look at the old lady eating the soup. in the background. Okay.
So this is part of the school. This is how you teach the school. So you take a classic scene, you shift foreground, background, you sort of focus on the background actors. And this is to teach them how to be more believable as background actors.
Sure. Well, because, okay, when you're learning acting, let's say you're learning traditional acting, you're learning how to emote when the camera's, 6 inches from your face, right?
Yeah.
We never teach that to the background because we're just used to the camera being yards away.
And I'm sure you've got this, but my initial kind of thought when I'm hearing this is like, yeah, that doesn't matter. Like the background doesn't matter because like they're not actually a part of the scene. They're not moving the scene forward. They're just supposed to be there to make that scene feel believable. Mm-hmm. Like if you're for instance, When Harry Met Sally, like that scene between the two of them, if you move them to the background of that cafe, then I feel like you're sort of missing the entire crux of like what that scene is about. And then really like the whole movie, right? Because that's kind of like the most important scene that we remember from that movie.
Yes. Now, what you're saying, I totally understand. That might seem insensitive to other backgrounds. And when I say backgrounds, I'm speaking about actors. They call them background. And they might say, why is my peas and carrots conversation not as important as what this
Well, because it's not in the script.
Right. However, as I spoke of earlier, right, we say things out loud to ourselves. So someone's back there going, I got to remember to go to the doctor's appointment. I got to remember, I got to call my kid, make sure they're okay. That's not important. That doesn't have weight. You can see that in the foreground and then you can hear about a relationship or something. It almost feels like you're the voyeur and on their relationship. That almost helps their story, arguably.
So this is so interesting. I'm just curious, does any of this lead to work? Do any of the people who take your background university, do they work in the industry as background actors?
I'm not allowed to disclose exactly how many people work in our industry, but yes, people do find work. But here's what's even more important than that I found, honestly, is that somebody who's not a background by nature or by trade will come in. They're got to give a speech at work. They got to learn how to talk better in their, social circles, talk more with confidence. They come in. And they do an unbelievable scene at a cafe table in the foreground about, oh my gosh, this sandwich is so good. They feel empowered then to go out and speak to 100 people if they have to give a speech at work.
So you're sort of teaching confidence. It's like confidence in saying out loud the things that sometimes are being said in our heads.
Yes. And people need that. They need to know.
How much do people pay for this?
It's $500 a class.
Is that multiple sessions or is that just one day?
It's a morning.
$500 for the morning.
Yes. Okay. And you come in, you get there around 9 and warm up. I'll come in around 10:30 after everyone has done the peas and carrots, unique New York and everything. Oh, yeah. Open pit barbecue sauce. They do all the warm ups so that we can get right to it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll pull out a classic scene. We'll do, Forrest Gump, when he's on the bench looking at the chocolates, but we're focusing on everybody else walking through the square.
Do you have someone playing Forrest Gump in that?
Like who cares about him? We put,
because he's just in the background now.
Yeah. You don't ever want to be the star in the scene. You want to be the person going like, I am just concerned about this weather today or whatever it is, or just saying what you're doing. I'm walking through, I'm checking my watch. Well, that's interesting. What's that guy doing?
So then you get there at 10:30, you do a scene. And then when is the class over?
Before lunch.
So let's call it noon.
Yeah, it's usually a noon break. We have a bathroom break.
It's about an hour and a half day of work for you. How many, what is the class capped at?
I won't take more than 10 students because anything more than that is going to be CGI in a movie anyway.
So that's $5,000 for you for that hour and a half.
Right. But I do these, you have to remember, I got to go to different states. I got to travel.
You're doing more than one a day, potentially?
Well, I mean, it depends on the enrollment. The thing about this is that backgrounds are in danger. I'm sure you know about AI, right? And so they're going to eventually try to phase all these people out. Now, more than ever, we need them. We need them to step up. We need them to get in front of the star of the show. We need them to put their hand on the star's face and push them back until that star falls backward onto their own back. And we need them to be in front of the camera. And I say that figuratively. I'm not calling for violence amongst background people and number ones on the call sheet at all.
Yeah. I would hope not. I'm honestly, it's hard for me to even focus on anything other than the amount of money that you make for that hour and a half of your day. And I'm so impressed. And honestly, like, I'm a little jealous that I didn't come up with this, because it doesn't feel like the work you're doing is super hard.
Dude, do you see how this works? See, I was in the background of what you were saying. And
so you weren't listening.
Right.
You were just kind of,
I was thinking about my day and all the things, and I was slowly becoming the dominant character. Do you see how that, so that's sort of what I teach in conversation. Yeah. If someone's saying something and it seems like they're being the star, this is a way for you to.
Do you use this in your normal life? You just used it with me. Do you use this in general, like with people in conversation, like in your life? Like, let me ask you something. Are you in a relationship?
There's mixed results with that, is your answer.
Interesting.
Yeah, it depends. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go on a date, for instance, and someone starts talking about themselves, but you feel like your story is more dominant in the narrative, the broad narrative. Sometimes I don't like to just be drowned out gradually by your thoughts.
Yeah, I would hate that. I would hate that. If I was on a date and you said, tell me about your family. And I was like, well, you know, I have a brother and we really get along. And one of the things that I like
to get more creamer, because I always forget when I'm there, like that. Like when I'm at the store, my mind goes blank. You know what I mean? And so all of a sudden, you see how I did that? Now I'm the main character. That's what we teach.
I would hate that on a date. I would absolutely hate that. I would probably get up immediately and say, no, thank you for this date, because I don't feel like there's any actual connection or give or take here. But what you're saying is it's worked for you.
Well, I've heard variations of what you just said. Mm-hmm. That was a nice version of what I usually hear. But
yes. What do you usually hear?
Well, you know, people... Oh, they just start calling you names. Oh, you're self-involved. You're a narcissist. And I say, excuse me, I am a background teacher. I teach background people how to take control of the narrative. I'm just doing my job.
But then don't they say, like, why are we on a date then?
That bingo, bingo. Why are you doing that to me? I'm trying to get to talk to you about myself and trying to get to know you, all that stuff.
So I asked a little bit earlier if you're in a relationship. I take it you're not in a relationship.
Not currently. I'm between relationships now.
How long was your last relationship?
It's a couple of weeks, a couple of dates.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm surprised they went out with you more than once. I think that's a testament to, I guess, something about you. Because if you're doing this, it would be infuriating.
I'm a good teacher. That's all. I mean, look, I'm just teaching what we all naturally want to do anyway, which is, hey, take control of whatever is in front of you that you find boring and talk about yourself.
But even right that, so if you were on a date with someone and you're basically saying, like, oh, this person I'm with is boring. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just start talking over them and start telling them what my internal monologue is.
Yeah, that's a way to think about it for sure. It's definitely a mindset we teach in there, that anyone that you see that you don't like, they're the star of this show and you need to overthrow them in a nice way.
So you have multiple locations. You're in multiple states. Mm-hmm. Your work on a day is an hour and a half, maybe. You make $5,000 for that. Do you have like other people also running these workshops for you?
There are other backgrounds that have become teachers. Yes. You know, this is a growing school. You know, I'm sort of the main producer, the executive. And then you have, of course, yeah, we have teachers that have gone on to do other work in movies, and then others that have not chosen to do that, but like to teach.
Have you ever done another day on set as an extra?
Not officially.
Just that one day on The Matrix.
It was such an eye-opening experience. Like, The Matrix was so special for so many reasons in pop culture, but really I think it launched a revolution of background actors who want to be closest to the camera.
I'm going to be honest. If I am a producer, director, showrunner, anything, and I'm listening to this conversation, I would say never, ever, ever hire a background actor who has taken Background University with Brian Shortall, because they are going to like jeopardize to my
I'm
film.
Thinking about my, you know, what I have to do after this. And see, you know, how all of a sudden we're talking about me and I kind of just, you were put into the background.
Yeah, yeah. This is an example of you doing it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. If not for the fact that you make, I would assume, millions of dollars a year on this university, I would say that, yeah, that I really just hate this so much. But I also recognize that you're an entrepreneur, and I have a lot of respect for entrepreneurs. And I wish I came up with this idea first. because it sounds really like an easy load for you. It doesn't sound like it serves the industry in any way whatsoever. It sounds like a scam for the people who take it, because I can't imagine they leave with any sort of skill set. But I am jealous. I'm not going to lie, Brian. I am really jealous.
Well, take a class, you know, we can give
reflecting
you
reflecting on your one day on set on The Matrix. Can you leave us with anything significant other than the fact that it built a background university empire for you? Anything that fans of the film might find interesting about you and your experience on that film?
I don't know if anyone knows this, and it might not even be public, but Keanu Reeves is so nice.
Yeah, everyone does know that.
Do they all say that? Oh.
Oh, so many people. It's kind of like, maybe it's like one of the most universally known things about like any actor is like that Keanu is good. He's a good person.
Nice, and I'm very cool and nice to speak to as well, probably as well. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
So that would be the thing you would leave people with, is that Keanu was really sweet.
Yeah. And I'm really as well. Yeah. Sort of that. Yeah. I'm very sweet and nice, and thank you.
I really don't want to do this, but I feel like, you know, because you've given us time today, I feel obligated. Is there a way for people to find this school if they're interested in learning from you?
Sure. Just go on backgroundu.org.edu. It's an organization first. It's just a tax thing. And then we're an educational sort of system filing.
Is it background U as in the letter U, like short for university, or background U, Y-O-U?
Second one. That was it. Y-O-U. Sorry. Thank you. I forget to...
backgroundu.org.edu.
It's almost like, think of it this way. The EDU is in the background of the organization. We're just here. We're also in a university, but... Tax
great. Yeah. And $500 for that first class. And mm-hmm. it will, in my opinion, not serve them in any way as an actor wanting to work in the industry, but somehow
it's good. And it's probably a good thing too. Yeah.
Listen, Brian, I'm grateful to have had this interview with you. I don't feel like I learned very much about The Matrix necessarily, but I did learn what it takes to build an empire for background actors. So I really appreciate that. And I do wish you all the success in the world. And I'm really jealous of this enterprise that you've created.
Thank you very much. And, you know, anytime you want, come on down to the theater and take the red pill. No. Okay. All right.
No, yeah, it's not for me. But I really appreciate you coming. Thank you so much, Brian.
You bet. And Christine. Thank
good
you.
Luck with everything.
Okay. Sounds great. You too.
Thank you, Brian and Christine. Well, guys, this is the end of our Matrix season, but we'll be back for the novelization of...
Drumroll, please.
Dirty Dancing.
Amazing.
That's right.
Yeah. Wait, Dirty Dancing. It's going to be a fun one. What was the last time you saw Dirty Dancing? Vibe from The Matrix. Oh, God. For me, probably 10 years ago, but I'm so excited to watch it again. I truly cannot wait for this to be homework.
I've never seen Dirty Dancing. All I know is Patrick Swayze's in it. I know nothing else.
Well, there's Dirty Dancing. Something. You know that. Go ahead, Christine.
You do know that. You are going to want to be lifting someone over your head after you watch this movie. And like every woman just like wants to be lifted into the air. Or man, you can, yeah, either way. It's just you want to be either lifting or lifted after you watch this movie. It's really fun.
I like it. It gives me a lot, but it also gives me nothing. So I'm still excited about watching this movie.
That's sort of this podcast in a nutshell, right? Gives you a lot and also gives you nothing.
Absolutely.
I feel like with The Matrix, you wanted like invisible wires to lift you in the air. Now you want a handsome dance partner to lift you in the air.
Exactly.
So trying to draw a connection.
You just want
to
be at like a summer camp with your family and just, you know, sneak off with someone cute. It's going to be fun.
That's very specific.
With that, I think we'll say goodbye to this season and we'll see you next time. So, Steven, for the last time, unplug us from this matrix.
Sure thing. The Novelizers is produced by me, Stephen Levinson, with Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Bowen, Dennis DiClaudio, Rob Kuttner, and Suchatis Bokil. Music by Cole Emhoff. Graphic design by Crystal Dennis. Theme song by Andrew Lynn, performed by Knotts. Special thanks to Chris Karwalski and WYSO Radio in Yellow Springs, Ohio. The Novelizers is a work of parody unauthorized by Warner Brothers. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, and TikTok, and please donate to our Patreon. Copyright 2024, Novelizers LLC. Take us out, Amy Mann.
There was a matrix made of computers. There was a guy who could dodge all of the bullets. He lived in fluid, just like a fetus. But he was born again like baby Jesus. Novelize that movie. Write a book and also read it to me.